This is session 21 of our study on leadership this morning. And just as a reminder, you know, we are in that section of leadership called the vision, where the leader interacts with the culture to create a vision of a preferable future. And as we've been saying with this sample of the star by Glenn Heemstra, the preferred future vision becomes the star you steer by, not a simple map to be followed. In other words, maps, there are a variety of ways to get to your destination. The destination is what the vision is. The map will come later as we talk about strategic planning. But we've looked at now, you know, how you do things like develop a vision. How do you experience God leading you into the next step or phase of your ministry or the ministry business that you are part of, whether it's church or nonprofit or whatever? So you've looked at that. We talked about communicating that vision. How do you do that rollout in a successful way? Well, today, before we begin to move on to that idea of change and specifically writing the strategic plan, I just want to spend a few moments noticing on what is the title on this subject for today, and that is Vision Killers. You'll find out that as soon as you roll out a vision for a preferred future, there are going to be some forces that come against that vision that are designed to kill it. The first one of these, obviously, is tradition. Now, tradition has been known for decades to be something that will stop churches from changing. In fact, there was a book that came out years and years ago by Ralph Naber called The Seven Last Words of the Church. You know, we never tried it that way before. Traditions are powerful. Just in normal life, we tend to pattern our lives, right? I mean, just think of how you get ready in the morning. If you have a certain pattern that you follow because it's comfortable, it's something that you've gotten used to and you don't have to think about it anymore. So if you're in the shower, you shower yourself in a particular order. You clean yourself up, you shave in a particular order, particular time. You go to your closet, you choose clothes in a particular way, particular time. And you ritualize all of those things because it's just easier and it's comfortable and you don't have to make decisions a great deal. In fact, some people, like Steve Jobs of Apple Computer, used to wear only one thing. He wore jeans and a black turtleneck. And he said, because that way I don't have to make any decisions when I go to my closet. These kind of things are powerful in forming our lives. And if we do that enough times, there are things that are repeated enough times, they become traditions. They become entrenched. And when you start giving a vision that's going to require some kind of change of people in the future, they're automatically going to say, that'll never work. We've never done it that way before. That's the statement. Now, many of you have faced this already at some time or another. You faced it because there has been somebody in your ministry who's didn't like the way you've done it. Or if you're new on the scene, if you're a new pastor, and the other pastor was there a long time, Pastor so-and-so didn't do it that way. You know, I heard that a little bit when I went to my very first church. The pastor that had preceded me was deeply loved and appreciated in that congregation. And I came with a whole different set of gifts and set of interests and a new vision for the church. And, kept on here. But that's not the way that was done before. It's one of those things that is designed to kill mission. Now, the people of God are good people. You know, they wouldn't say, yeah, we're trying to kill the vision. They're just trying to be honest about their own reaction. They're not out to get you usually, but they are people who are focused somewhere. In fact, a tradition always focuses backward, and vision always focuses forward. And so tradition people are looking back, and they are celebrating all the things that were done in that ministry, and you're going to change that. And we're going to talk about that next time when we talk about the price to pay for living out a vision. That people will identify you with a vision. Regardless of how many people were connected with it, they're going to identify you with a mission. Yeah. We liked what was, and you're going to change it. And we haven't done it that way before. It won't work. Think of a man in my church in California. After I came there, we instituted a bunch of changes. We were looking at a variety of changes for the future. And in fact, the community was changing. In Southern California, there was a rapid change in population. And so where we were had a lot of changes in demographics and a great deal of time. And so it wasn't just us that was changing as a church or seeing the change to become something different. It was the Christian school that the church was closely associated with. They began to realize that the birth rates were going down in our community of four or five churches that were supporting churches to the Christian school. And so when they looked ahead 12 years, and I had the privilege of chairing their vision or planning team, we looked ahead 12 years and realized that if we just depended on the supporting churches to provide students for that school, it was going to be a shadow of itself because there were only going to be like 20 kindergartners. And right now the school was a healthy like 700 or 800 kids. And so if there's only that many kindergartners, what's the future hold? Beyond that, it's going to go down further, and it's going to go down further, and it's going to go down further. It's that kind of thing that they were looking at and saying, you know, we're going to have to change to survive. So they were talking about change. Well, a man who's in our church who is a very wealthy man, you know, God had given him a lot of material gifts. He was somebody who was very generous with his giving. I mean, he really was faithful to not just our community in giving, especially in the support of missions, but faithful to the school. He was faithful to a variety of organizations beyond that, a radio ministry. He was faithful to ministries within the denomination. He was a generous man, but the changes just got to be too much for him at one point. And he began to talk in this way of tradition about remembering when. And I think one of the breaking points was when the school projected another whole group of children that they might get, but it would be different because these children weren't from the same Christian background that we were. And this man was afraid of what that was going to do to the system. So, I heard of this conversation secondhand, but the superintendent of the school visited him. I visited him. We talked with him at various times because we valued him as a person, and certainly we valued his ongoing support of what was going on in ministry. Well, the superintendent visited him and finally started talking about the fact of the fact that these changes were saying that the present is not good. All the changes in the community are not good. And so they began to talk about when was it good? When was it good? And they concluded, superintendent related to me, that it was good back in the middle 1950s. That was when it was safe. That was when it was good. That's when families, divorce rate wasn't so prevalent in our community. There wasn't all this problem with racial relations and racial interrelations. There weren't all these difficulties of overcrowding on the freeways. It was good in the middle 1950s. And so as we were proposing as a church a major building program, as the church was possibly proposing a relocation and a building program, it just got to be too much because he couldn't see. Vision is harmed by those who are focusing on tradition. And so you as a leader are going to have to address this vision killer, especially if your organization has been around for a period of time. You can bet there are going to be people who will speak this way, maybe not exactly, but they will speak this way. So how do you deal with this vision killer? You honor the past. You show how the new vision is a continuation of the old vision. You identify heroes from the past, and especially charter members. One of the things I learned from a fundraiser when we were going through a relocation that was going to cost a great deal of money, we were talking about how are we going to frame this for the congregation. And so we were talking about promotional videos that we would produce and what there would be in each one. And we found real value in identifying some of the charter members. Some of the people who had the vision of starting that church. The church started as a vision of a group of people, a small group of people. There was no pastor when it started. It was just this group of small people, but they had this vision of a different kind of church in their community where people could be welcome, where there was a more evangelistic emphasis, where people could come in and get to know Jesus, where the ministry would stretch out into the community. And so one after another, we lined some of those charter members up for video, and we had them sitting in various places and just talking about how they were in favor of this vision. Saying, yes, it's going to mean big changes. It's going to mean driving to a different area. It's going to mean different seating patterns. It's going to mean all of that stuff. But it's going to mean that we can reach more people for Jesus Christ. They talked about heroes and some of the sacrifices that were paid, about the person who had the vision for the first building in the church and how he'd bought that land before the church could afford to buy it so that he could reserve it for the property. They talked about how the new place, what was projected, was going to be fantastic because we had purchased 21 acres on a corner in what was going to be a major intersection in a newly developed area of Southern California. They talked about all that, and it was a marvelous thing because those that were saying tradition is bad couldn't say it. Because here were people who were part of it, who were honored leaders in the process, and yet they were saying, here we go. We've got to go. We're part of this. So if you deal with this, you honor the past. You acknowledge that these people had something good going, and you're just trying to continue the great vision that they had. So, tradition can be a powerful vision killer. The second one is fear. Fear means breaking out of a comfort zone. Fear means risk. And with the idea of risk comes the idea of failure. Now, this idea can be very terrifying for people, the idea of failure. Now, the fear of failure is something that hit me personally, I have to say. When we changed, as I've shared earlier, you know, we had this vision of creating a larger church, and we were trying to build that church on 4.36 acres. And we had money that we had committed and we had raised, and it was going to cover a large portion of the cost. And then we began to change that vision, and it grew, and we looked at relocation. And now we were looking not like at a few million dollars, but we were looking at tens of millions of dollars in order to accomplish this new vision in this new community. And I got to tell you, I was scared of failure. As I've shared earlier in the introductory class, you know, part of what my baggage is carrying is the idea that I'm this dumb little kid, and so failure would reinforce that, and so I was scared of failure. And so as we began to revision our ministry and revision relocation, I remember talking with somebody and just saying, I don't know how to deal with this. And I had one person help me a great deal. How do you handle this? When fear hits you as a person, well, you answer fear with faith, with a question, is it God's will? Is it God's vision, not my vision? Person that helped me a great deal with that was a man I was on a retreat with. We were part of a regional envisioning group on a retreat for several days, trying to say what would God call all of our churches in our region of California to in our denomination. And we just got talking one night, and it turned intimate, and we began sharing intimate things. And I shared with him some of my fear. As we were going into this, we hadn't started the building process yet. We were still in that vision selling thing. And, you know, I just shared how scared I was to go into this whole thing. And so he led me through a process. He said, okay, how did you make the decisions? Each step along the way, what were the major decisions? How did you go about it? You know, and so I was able to identify the prayer that went into each step of the way. I was able to identify the ideas that had come and how they had come. How we had brought it to the congregation and how we had congregational endorsement for moving forward. And each step of the way, we talked about that. And one of my big fears was, man, that's a lot of money to ask of people. And so he walked away at the end of the day. He said, you know, Bruce, he said, I just got to say, what you've described would tell me that your vision is God's will for your church at this time. He said, and to move forward, you may have to remember that if it's God's will, it's God's bill. In other words, God has the resources. He's the one who's going to have to pay for it. And in some senses, that was incredibly freeing for me. It didn't take away my fear entirely, but it took away some of it, allowed me to move forward, to not allow it to kill the vision. Now, that's fear on my part. You will also be dealing with fear of a variety of kinds on the part of your people. For some of them, it's fear of losing influence and power. During one time of change, I remember a psychiatrist friend came to visit me in my office. And it was during a time where there was just a lot of criticism about what was going on. And he said, you know, Look at the people who are the major voices in all of this criticism. He said, they're in the age of power. In other words, he said between about 40 to about 55, 60 is an age of power. And when they get toward the upper end of that, he said, they often tend to lose power. It begins to diminish in their lives. They're less influential. They don't have as many people who listen to them. He said, and so in many ways, they're trying to hang on to power. They're grabbing it and holding on. And he said, you know, you're going to have to remember that their fear is of losing power. And so how can you invite them into the process that will allow them some influence, though you don't give them veto power and you don't put them with too many people to voice their fears? Now, unwittingly, I found that I was somebody who was just nurturing that kind of fear, nurturing fear of failure on the way to the vision completion. What happened was, I listened to these people who were trying to kill the vision. And they wouldn't say that again. They're good people. But they had all kinds of questions. They had reservations. They had fears. And when I was talking publicly, I would try to identify with them because I wanted to bring them along. And so I would acknowledge their fears. And I would say, I know we're afraid of this. And I know we're afraid of this. And I know we're afraid of this. And one time somebody came to me and said, look, you've got to talk positively about this whole thing. You can't be talking negatively because it's scaring us. We'll talk about that next time in the next session, about how, you know, we're called to go all in when we have a vision for change. But here, I just want you to note that fear is a huge vision killer, and you've got to be aware of it, and you're going to have to address it because there will be people who will try to unwittingly or maybe even plottingly try to kill your vision. So, tradition and fear. Third one is stereotypes. Oftentimes we make stereotypes and that keeps us from fulfilling a vision. It may even keep us from having a vision. I think of a church in Arizona. They were getting this new vision of being more relevant in their community. And they realized that they would probably have to do something about their music, but that was a scary thing for them because they had an older congregation. They had a very traditional music kind of worship setting. They had the pipe organ that somebody had donated years and years ago, and it was one of those holy cows, you know, those things that are precious in the heritage of the church. They had a choir that got up there in robes. It was a very traditional order of service. All of those things were just what they experienced, the leadership week to week. And so when people started talking about change within the vision team, within the team that was creating a vision for the new future, it was concerning until they actually took a survey of their congregation. You see, their stereotype was, we've got older people, they like traditional worship. That's what they want. They did the survey and they found that most of the people there wanted a greater variety in worship. And so all it took was asking them, and that could take away the stereotype that would allow the vision to move forward. Another church that I had a call to at one point had a stereotype about their community. As I was interacting with them, one of the questions I asked in some of the initial phases of seeing if I was going to go there as pastor and if they were going to invite me there to become their pastor, one of the questions I asked was, what's been happening in this community over the last 10 years? And, you know, they said, there hasn't been much change in this community for a while. You know, it's pretty stable. Good things, a lot of people here. It's there's a certain level of profitability here. There's a certain level of prosperity here. It's just a good, solid, pretty secure neighborhood to be in. Well, then I did the demographics. I began to look at the demographics for that city and found that there was radical kind of change, ethnic change going on in their community. And later on, I was with the chairman of their elder board, and I was riding down the main street of their town, and there are all these signs that line Main Street. And as we looked, we found that there was very seldom one in English. And I said, what happened here anyway? Who are all these business owners? He says, yeah. He says, you know, this all signs used to be in English, but now they're in Korean and they're in Japanese and they were in Indian and all kinds of different ethnic groups that were now part of that area. And so the next vision that they got as a result of shutting down their stereotype of just a white world that they were part of was that it just blew up their vision so that it grew greatly. Now, this was not a vision killer for them. It was a vision grower. Now, they had a vision for growing their church, and they've had various strategies, but they hadn't yet caught on to the fact that, wow, we are in a great mission field here. So, new community, yes, that can kill your vision if you have a stereotype about it that no one will come or if this kind of ministry won't work. Find out. That's how you address this. You find out the truth. And you share it with your people. So, we've looked at the tradition, fear, stereotypes. Complacency is another great vision killer. Now, 70% of plans fail. And one of the reasons, primary reason they fail, is complacency. And that is that people like it the way it is. And they don't want to change. There's a lack of inertia to actually institute change. In fact, one of the ways you have heard this in our tradition, if you were in my tradition, when people have new plans, new ideas, you hear it in a certain sentence that will try to kill vision and just make it, you know, can't we just stay the way we are? And it's this phrase, if we just preach the word, God will bless us. Now, I took that quote from a church that was looking at a new youth emphasis and a new youth ministry. And was talking about the fact that the church had experienced some decline in membership. And so they were looking at a variety of ways to be more impactful in their community. But now, as they were looking at this, the people didn't want to make the changes necessary because it was going to involve changing times of worship. It was going to involve the building being used for a variety of things and by a group that may not care for the building, take care of the building in the same way. And they would probably have repair costs and increased cleaning costs and et cetera, et cetera. And so the idea is we don't need those plans. We don't need that vision. If we just preach the word, God will bless us. How do you address this one? This is huge. This is just a huge, huge thing. I can't tell you how huge this is. You know, can't we just be happy the way we are? So, what you need is some short-term wins. You need to get permission to try things for a short period of time. You know, anytime we introduced a new worship service or a new worship time that would confuse the regular worship times, we would say, let's try it for a three-month period, you know? And at the end of that three-month period, to give her a report, to talk about how this was a win, to see what God had done with it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Look for short-term wins. Things that say, yeah, the changes that we institute, we get permission for this small change. But now, when we get success, we get permission for the big, big, bigger changes that will help us fulfill the vision. So short-term wins are important. Now, this means you've got to choose very carefully what you're going to emphasize as your short-term win to make sure that it's going to be a short-term win. Word enough? Complacency. We're going to talk more about that later as we get into strategic planning and change theory. Here's another one, fatigue. Be sure you steward energy. Years ago, it was a rather shocking report that came out of a group that specialized in helping churches plant daughters. And what they found was the best way to accomplish planting a daughter church was sending out a planting team. So you don't send out just one person or two people. You send out a team of people, 15, 20, the best. And yet, then you have them working on it, and you send a team, hopefully, of 100 to get that church established well. Well, the study that was done of all the churches that have been planted in that style and found that the general wisdom was that after 1 year, members of the planting team were no longer members of that church, the new daughter church. They came back to the mother church. One of the greatest reasons was fatigue. There was so much that rested on them. Yes, it was exciting to get that new church going. There's nothing like it. If you talk to people, they will point back to those times as some of the most exciting in their lives. But it's hard, hard, hard work. And so People will get tired. You will get tired. How do you address fatigue? Well, it's very simple. You keep restating the vision for yourself. You keep restating the vision for other people. You talk to yourself, you talk to your other people, and you give people the permission to rest. When I started to become aware of this as we were going through change, I remember going to a couple in my church and just saying, you know what, you're too involved. They were shocked. They were friends of mine, but he was involved. I think he was on council at that time, our elder and deacon gathering. So he was a significant elder. She, I had asked to be head of our prayer ministry. And so she had been involved in prayer ministry. And as change goes on, there was more spiritual warfare. We're going to talk about that in the future as well. And so they were just getting tired. They were getting tired. And so I said, you know what, you folks, I value you long term. You need a break. You need a break. Now, I've talked before about your need for a break just a few sessions ago in that idea of despair. If you get to that point where we talked about Elijah, where God gave him food and gave him rest and gave him a new vision of his mission and ministry, you've got to take times to take care of yourself and steward your energy. Don't get down too far before you seek help. Enough said on that. That'll kill your vision. If people get tired, they'll get too tired. And then the last one that I want to focus on today is a short-term vision, short-term thinking. It's easy to stop partway. And people will start saying, can't we just be happy the way we are? This is one you'll hear. They'll see the wins and they'll celebrate those, but then will come a time when the vision requires a greater change. And this phrase will come out. Can't we just be happy the way you are? You'll hear people say that. Can't we just be happy? We're tired of change, basically. I had a good partner. He was a partner of mine for 20 years on staff, sharing ministry together, sharing intimately with ministry. And we had come to a point where we had reached some of our goals, a good number of our goals. And so the challenge now was, where are we going to go from here? And he looked at me and he sighed and he says, can't we just be happy with where we are? And the answer is, no, no. So how do you answer this? Well, you answer it by looking at, is it God's vision or ours? Now, I trusted this man greatly. He was my partner. And so that made me say, well, maybe we've done enough. Maybe it's time to look at, you know, something else. And so together, we began to pray and we began to study. And we took some others in on that and asked, okay, this vision of relocation, is that really ours or is it God's? And if it's God's vision, then we go ahead because we have a master. We have a leader. We have a Savior who's also the shepherd who's saying, here we go. And our job is to follow. So these are vision killers. Be aware of them. Address them. And you'll find your way going more smoothly. Don't be surprised when they show up. But rather, be ready for it. Have a strategy. And it will make your mission, your vision, much more real and much more attainable.